From Pittsburgh to Philadelphia, Erie to Harrisburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, after years of corruption and controversy in our statewide appellate courts, could a change be coming in the way in which we elect our judges and justices? State Senator Rich Alloway is here to discuss. A new report on air quality in Pennsylvania is a bit misleading. We get details from Eric Montardi and Frank Amrat on this week's Allegheny Institute report. And several months ago, Congress passed a budget-busting omnibus spending bill. Now it has the opportunity to cut back on some of that overspending. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Senator Rich Alloway in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Harrisburg Patriot News this past week reported on a political fundraiser held for Governor Tom Wolf's reelection campaign at the offices of a law firm his administration is suing. The state is seeking damages from Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney PC, among other professional service firms, for their role in a project that contributed to what was essentially bankruptcy for the city of Harrisburg. After announcing the lawsuit against the firm with great fanfare, the Wolf campaign last week held a $1,000 per head fundraiser at the Buchanan, Ingersoll, Harrisburg offices. A spokesman said the campaign operates separately and independently from the administration, but opponents charged it was a blatant conflict of interest, especially for a governor who has banned officials in his administration from accepting gifts of any kind. Former Governor Ed Rendell says he has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. The good news is treatments have stopped the disease's progression, and he has maintained his quality of life. The former governor said he's going public with his condition as a public service to encourage people who may have symptoms of Parkinson's to seek early treatment. Rendell served as governor of Pennsylvania from 2003 through 2010. Prior to that, he was mayor of Philadelphia and a Philadelphia city district attorney. Rendell said his mother also suffered from Parkinson's disease, and he became alarmed when he developed balance problems and his hands began shaking. Fortunately, medical treatment has proven effective and has arrested the disease's progression. Read about all things Pennsylvania at the all-new patownhall.com. In recent years, we have seen state Supreme Court justices resign from the bench. At least one ended up in jail, and an activist court has triggered unprecedented controversy. Making matters worse, statewide judges and justices come from just 15 of the state's 67 counties, resulting in most regions having no representation. But all that would change under a proposal to elect statewide jurists by region rather than the current statewide election system. Here to talk about the proposal is State Senator Rich Alloway. Senator Alloway represents Franklin, Adams, and York counties in the state Senate. Rich, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Rich, if we look at the whole issue of redistricting and redistricting reform, we're going to get to that in a little more detail in a couple of minutes. But one proposal that has gotten new life in the Senate in recent weeks is this idea of electing appellate court judges by district. So can you first of all explain how we currently elect our appellate court judges and what courts we're talking about?
The appellate courts would be the Commonwealth, Superior, and Supreme Court. And I think one of the biggest reasons behind this is to get more fair and balanced representation on the courts. What happens so many times in Pennsylvania, we're a very large and diverse state, from Pittsburgh to Erie to South Central Pennsylvania, the Northeast and the Poconos and Philly. There's a lot of different viewpoints in our state. But what happens is these courts, these judges run statewide, so these courts end up getting packed with judges from Pittsburgh and Philly, which, I mean, that's fine if you're from Pittsburgh or Philly, but what if you're from central Pennsylvania and you don't feel like you're being represented by these judges on these big issues? And I think it's particularly more important now that this particular Supreme Court has decided to become political and an activist court. Well, if you're going to be an activist court, then you need to have representation from all over the state. For example, right now, in Pennsylvania Supreme Court, four of the Supreme Court justices are from Pittsburgh. And one is from Philly, one is from central Pennsylvania in Harrisburg area, and one's from the Northeast. So it's really weighted right now towards Pittsburgh. Normally it's the opposite way. It's weighted towards Philadelphia. So, look, I think this is a very simple proposal, and I think it's good for democracy. I think it's good for the court system to break the state up into different regions. Again, we would let an independent commission draw those districts, and then a judge from that area would run in that area. And I think also what it would do is allow people to get to know the candidates a little bit better. I mean, I look at myself. I'm a state senator. I've been involved in politics for 30 years now, and I've voted many times for appellate judges that I have no idea who they are. I may have met them one time, and many times I never even met them. So I'm just voting on party line. And I don't think that's the kind of policy that we want, that we want people just going in and voting their party and not really knowing anything about what the judge stands for.
These appellate court judges are currently elected statewide, and
Correct. That
plays into what you're just talking about, Rich, which is if we had these regions, would it then allow the candidates for judge to be more grassroots-oriented, maybe even take the impact of money a little bit out of the process?
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying. And we want these judges to come into our county and hold town halls and get a chance to answer questions and for people to meet them, so they can make an informed judgment whether they support the person or not.
As we look at this, and it's now gotten tied to the fact that we have had this ongoing push for so-called reform of the process by which we develop congressional districts and state legislative districts in Pennsylvania. Before we get to the reform proposals that are before the Senate, tell us how currently are congressional districts drawn, and how are legislative districts drawn, because they are different processes?
The Constitution of Pennsylvania says very explicitly that redrawing the congressional districts and the Senate and House districts is a legislative process. Okay. Now, when you deal with the congressional districts, it actually has to be a bill, and it's a bill that goes through the House and the Senate and needs the governor's signature. So it truly is a more bipartisan type process, because it's just like a bill would become law. It has to go through that process. But when it comes to the House and Senate districts, all that is a resolution. So the Senate, we draw our own districts, and the House draws their own districts. Now, I understand why people don't like that process. I fully understand that they see it as a closed-door, corrupt process that's politically driven. And you know what? They're not wrong. It is politically driven. That's what redistricting is. It's a wholly political process. It's ugly. It's nasty. It's dirty. I get it. So I understand why people are uncomfortable with it. But what I would say then is, what's your proposal then to do it differently? You're trying to take politics out of a political process. You're trying to find someone that has no political interest and no bias to draw these maps. Well, I would contend that person doesn't exist. So I think we should do just the opposite, and I think we should get together like a draft where the Democrats get their team, we get our team, and we draw each, take turns drawing a district from starting from Philadelphia and go west. At least people are open and transparent, and they can see what we're doing, because Republicans are trying to draw the maps that are favorable to them, and Democrats are trying to draw the maps favorable to them. So I always ask people, what's fair? What's fair? Fairness is in the eye of the beholder.
We are talking with State Senator Rich Alloway, and he hails from Franklin County, represents Franklin, Adams, and York counties in the state Senate, talking about redistricting. So that's how it's been done, Senator. And now, what is the proposal that is advancing through the Senate and into the House?
Well, the proposal that was put forth by a group of leftist activists, I mean, let's just call them what they are, the Fair Districts people and the other groups, the League of Women Voters and Planned Parenthood and all these left-wing groups, pushed this idea of creating this independent citizens commission. So tell me, who's this fair? How's this fair? So you want to appoint individuals that are not answerable to the public. I mean, if I do something good or bad, my constituents will let me know how they feel about it. So if you do this independent commission, what's going to be your recourse? If you don't like what they did, who are you going to complain to? We actually went through this process. Senator Mike Fulmer did a great job at working with them and trying to listen to their concerns. And we did come back to a legislative panel of legislative leaders and of different parties. Again, I support the proposal because I want legislators making these decisions because we're the ones who have to answer to the voters. It's over in the House. I don't know what the House is going to do. I hope they take a serious look at this. We're trying to improve the process and make it as equitable as possible.
In terms of the idea of an independent commission, I think you're absolutely correct, Rich, that there's no such thing as independent because every person brings their personal biases to it. And I would assume that any person who would serve on such a, quote, independent commission would be more interested than the average person in the process to spend the time and effort on doing that.
Exactly.
Who would pick the so-called independent commissioners?
Well, originally it was some type of random thing. But again, you know what's going to happen. Both sides are going to try and stack the pool that's going to be pulled from with partisans. The process that we passed out of the Senate uses Democrats, Republicans, and independents or others. And then we force, I think there was 7 or 8 out of the 11. So you force Democrats and Republicans to work with the independent to build a coalition, and I think that's the best way that you can get to the fairest outcome, forcing people to negotiate and compromise and work together.
In terms of the process that we used to arrive at congressional redistricting back in 2011, that did involve a number of hearings by the legislature, and am I not correct that it did actually, as you pointed out, it took the form of a bill. Did it not pass with Democrat votes and then get reviewed by the Supreme Court and get a stamp of approval?
Yeah, it absolutely did. That's why I really chuckle about this big charade of these fair districts people, because the last map went through the whole process. It went through the ups and downs and back and forth. We negotiated with the Democrats. We had a bunch of Democrats vote for the final product, and then it went to the courts. It faced numerous challenges, and the courts upheld it. And then 7 years later, this group comes back and says, these maps are unfair.
In terms of timing, Rich, we have a census coming up in 2020. That's just 2 years away. Mm-hmm. And then the redistricting process will begin as soon as the census is certified. You mentioned that the bill has passed the Senate. It's over in the House. We're not sure what the House is going to do with it. Are we up against any time constraints with getting this done?
Yeah, I believe we have to get it done so they can make it on the ballot. Because again, everyone needs to understand this. We're not just doing this on our own. This is to put it on the ballot to let the voters decide whether we should change the redistricting process. And then a separate question is whether we should elect judges, not statewide, but in the districts. So ultimately, what we're saying is let's let the people decide on these two major issues. And for the life of me, I don't understand why the Democrats would fight us on that. I mean, this isn't one party ramming something down the throats of the other party. This is saying we're putting this out to the voters. These are two huge issues. These are major reform issues. Let's let the voters tell us what they feel is right. And I don't understand what's bad about that.
And so both of these take the form of a constitutional amendment, correct?
Correct.
And that has to go through two sessions of the legislature. So in order to be done by 2021, something has to happen before this legislature expires at the end of November.
Yep, correct.
So we are up against a time deadline. You can read about this and find out a lot more about this topic and other topics at Senator Alloway's website. And, Rich, where can folks go to find that website?
They can find me at senatoralloway.com, or they can find me, Senator Rich Alloway, on Facebook.
Senator Rich Alloway of Franklin, Adams, and York Counties. Senator, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We are all concerned about having clean air to breathe, but a recent report by the American Lung Association doesn't exactly give a clear picture of the state's air quality. Here to dissect the report are Eric Montardi and Frank Gamrat of the Allegheny Institute.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is Frank Gamrat. Frank, you recently wrote a policy brief on the Lung Association's State of the Air Report for 2018. Can you give our listeners an idea of what this report found in regards to the air quality in Pittsburgh?
Absolutely. The Lung Association every year dishes out its State of the Air Report. And what it does is it looks at two main factors that affect air pollution across the country. One, of course, is ozone layer, and commonly known as smog. And the other is the particulate matter 2.5, which is known as soot. And, of course, we focus on the particulate matter 2.5 because that's where the Pittsburgh area had its worst ranking. Particulate 2.5 refers to small matter 2.5 micrograms in size that can float in the air and is primarily a result of combustion. That is, anytime something burns, you're going to have particulate matter in the air. And so that's the one we focus in on given our industrial past.
Okay, so you talked about the rankings here, and let's also specify when the Lung Association uses the word Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Do they mean the city of Pittsburgh? Do they mean the Pittsburgh metro area? Obviously, I'm leading you there with a question because it's a much bigger area when they say Pittsburgh's air quality is bad. What exactly do they mean by that?
Not only is it different than what people assume with Pittsburgh, it's also different than what we as researchers assume when you mean Pittsburgh. Typically, when we get on the radio, we talk about the Pittsburgh MSA. We're talking counties in Pennsylvania, Beaver, Butler, Allegheny, Armstrong, Westmoreland, Fayette, etc. The Lung Association takes a different tactic, and that is that they include two counties in West Virginia and one county in Ohio. And so it covers Pennsylvania, it covers Allegheny, Armstrong, Beaver, Butler, Fayette, Indiana, Lawrence, Washington, and Westmoreland. So it doesn't count Greene, it doesn't count Fayette. Typically, Fayette is counted in our MSA. So it has a bit of a different size to it than we're used to. Getting back to the rankings, you know, Pittsburgh ranked 8th at worst air pollution in the rankings across the country. And for those on the other side of the Pennsylvania think, well, what's the big deal? We don't care. Well, it turns out that in the top 25, Pennsylvania had 5 areas ranked as the worst air pollution in the country. Pittsburgh was actually tied with Lancaster. I guess all of the mills and industrial might of the Amish is really coming into play here. They're getting tarred and feathered like we are. Philadelphia came in at number 12, Harrisburg, York, Lebanon 15, and Johnstown and Somerset coming in at number 18.
Okay, so Frank, so the Pittsburgh region then is, mm-hmm. by the Lung Association measure, rather large and goes into 2 other states. So where are the meters? Mm-hmm. Where are these things placed that are measuring the smog and the soot, as you mentioned at the outset? Right.
There are 19 meters in this 12-county area that's being labeled as Pittsburgh. And so we have the most, obviously, in Allegheny County. We've got 10 in Allegheny County. We've got 5 in Washington, 3 in Westmoreland, 1 in Armstrong, 2 in Beaver. And then in Ohio, there's 4 in Jefferson County. West Virginia, there's 1 in Hancock County, and 3 in Brooke County. And since we brought it up, notice how I didn't mention Butler, Fayette, Indiana, and Lawrence counties. There aren't any monitors monitoring PM2.5 particulate matter in those 3 counties. So if you're living in those 3 counties, you really got to be upset because they're telling you bad air, yet they're not monitoring for air in your neighborhood.
So I think, as you mentioned before, that sometimes it seems like there's one monitor, mm-hmm. that seems to be really bad.
Right.
That drives up the ranking, mm-hmm. or lowers the air quality, however you want to look at it, of the Pittsburgh region. Did that happen again with this report, mm-hmm. for 2018, that there was just basically this one meter? And mm-hmm. can you tell our listeners, you know, where that measurement's taken from,
sure.
and why that seems to be happening after year?
There's a couple things in there. We'll take the placement of the monitors first. There's one monitor in what we call the Mon Valley here of southern Allegheny County, and that's in a little town called Liberty Borough. And this one meter just happens to be downwind of U.S. Steel's Clairton Coke Works, which is a major coke works where they bake coke into usable fuel for the steel mills. And we also, after we released this report, had a call. Somebody said it's also near a junkyard that burns tires and a railroad that runs through there with engines going through. So Whether or not those last two are true, I don't know, but it is in an industrial area, so it's no surprise that it tends to read up. Now, let's clarify a little bit of what we mean by read up. The Lung Association, specifically the Environmental Protection Association, has set the standards. Lung Association is just kind of reading along with what the EPA has put together, and this is all EPA data. The Environmental Protection Agency has classified a level of 12.0 micrograms per cubic meter of air as unhealthy for at-risk individuals. Those are adults, children, people with asthma, you know, highly sensitive populations. It can go as high as 15 for what's called secondary risk, and that is crops, building damage, animal, livestock, that kind of thing. Keep in mind that in 1997, the original level, the level was 15. It was changed to 12 back in 2012. And originally in 1971, the EPA had it at 75 and 60 parts per meter. And so you had this lowering of the threshold as air has gotten cleaner overall. And you know, this gets into the flies in the face of what the Lung Association said was, you know, deteriorating air quality across the country. When in fact, it has gotten so much better that the EPA has increased and tightened the standards to reflect better air in the environment. It's not a matter of climate change, as they claim. Now, getting back to the Liberty Borough Monitor, it came in at, one came in at 13, one came in at 12.9. Again, the critical level is 12. When you go back 10 years ago, both monitors were over 20. They've increased 35 and 38% respectively, improved respectively 35 and 38% in 10 years. That's not the stuff that makes the news, because, of course, it flies in the face of their narrative that things are worse and we need to, you know, shut down more industry to make things better. Even as a country overall, we've improved greatly. So air quality has, in fact, gotten better. And even the monitor that is out of compliance is barely out of compliance. Now, there was a third monitor in Steubenville that had one of three readings out of compliance. It came in at 12.7. So it was just slightly out of compliance. And it had once been 15. So it has gotten better as well. So you're getting this, I say, misinformation from the Lung Association. Their air is getting worse. It's what the media is picking up on. But the EPA data from which the Lung Association is basing its findings is showing that air quality is getting better and has been getting better for quite some time. And we're not nearly as bad as they say we are.
Frank, it's interesting stuff. And as always, our listeners can visit our website at www.alleghenyinstitute.org to read this brief and our other work, including some of the archives on this State of the Air report. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Efforts are underway in Congress to cut some of the overspending that was included in a massive omnibus budget bill last spring. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Democrats and Republicans have endured a rocky relationship in recent decades, frequently butting heads on talk shows and in Congress. But for all their arguing and fighting when it comes to overspending, they are two peas in a pod. It doesn't matter which party runs Congress or who sits in the Oval Office. The desire to spend regularly brings the two parties together in a convivial spirit that is as heartwarming as it is dangerous to our country's future. And all too often, budget-busting spending bills are approved by the very lawmakers who extol the virtues of fiscal restraint. Pennsylvania's delegation is no exception. Yet some joined congressional colleagues in passing a $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill that increased discretionary spending $143 billion over the budget caps. Those were the same budget caps Congress put in place a few years ago to control spending and rein in debt. You have to wonder, what's the point of enacting spending caps if you're just going to bust them whenever you feel like it? This latest bill helped push spending to more than $4 trillion, or $32,000 for every family in America. They say that making laws is a lot like making sausage. It's not a pretty sight, but at least when you buy sausage, you can look at the label and know what's in it. Not so here. There was less than 24 hours for House members to go over, much less debate, the 2,232-page legislative monstrosity before it was rushed to a vote, and we doubt anyone could tell you all of what's in it. Then again, maybe they didn't want to know what was in it. That would make sense because the bill was chock full of the same wasteful spending that fiscal conservatives have rallied against for years. A domestic budget to make Barack Obama proud is how The Atlantic put it. Senator Bob Casey was proud enough to vote for it, too, to put an exclamation mark on the bipartisan nature of the overspending. Those lawmakers who voted against the bill, including Pennsylvania reps Brendan Boyle, Scott Perry, Keith Rothfuss, Lloyd Smucker, and Mike Kelly, were lonely voices of fiscal sanity. After giving his reluctant signature, President Donald Trump told Congress, quote, "I will never sign another bill like this again," unquote. Nor should he. If lawmakers continue down their profligate path, a financial crisis is inevitable. Our national debt stands at $21 trillion and is estimated to grow another $13 trillion over the next 10 years. That is unsustainable. A reckoning is coming. Yet everyone in Congress keeps partying like there's no tomorrow. Lawmakers have some opportunities to address spending and undo some of the damage from the recent omnibus. First, they can eliminate some wasteful spending through the rescission process. Here's how that works. The president asked Congress to cancel previously approved spending, which Congress can do with a simple majority vote. The Trump administration recommended a rescission package that would cancel about $15 billion, much of which is unspent funds from previous years. Congress should act immediately to approve these cuts. The House recently approved them. Now it's time for the Senate to do the same. That would be a good start, but they could go much further. Americans for Prosperity identified some $45 billion in potential spending cuts that could be included in another rescission package. Lawmakers have yet another chance to show fiscal restraint when they vote on next year's spending bills, now being written for passage before October. They simply cannot approve more budget busters that don't put taxpayers first. Washington needs to tighten its belt, Rep. Barletta wrote in a recent op-ed. Families across America are forced to make tough decisions and live within their means. Their government should be held to the same standards. Indeed, it should. Senator Casey can show Pennsylvanians he is serious about cutting the size of government by supporting a rescission package and standing firm against runaway spending in next year's budget bills. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Find us on the web at www.afppennsylvania.org.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WFYL-AM in Jeffersonville, WJSA-FM in Jersey Shore, along with WCCL-AM and FM in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.